All right, Genesis chapter 4. Having finished with chapter 3 and seen that man has fallen from sin and been removed from the garden, we will now continue reading and see that mankind cannot go for more than a generation without committing a murder. We'll see the problem of sin blossoming here, as it were, and we'll talk a little bit about what the scriptures say about Cain and Abel, and particularly about Cain's heart condition and how that's applicable to our lives. And we'll also be talking about Genesis and its context with the other books of the law and how this passage pertains to justice. And of course, we will follow some rabbit trails along the way. So to the passage. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, "I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord." And again she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry, and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, and you must rule over it." It's very interesting. If we compare this to chapter 3, we note that the woman has a desire for her husband, but her husband must rule over her. Interesting. Back to the passage. Cain spoke to Abel his brother, and when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel your brother?" He said, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" The Lord said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. And now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth." Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you have driven me today from the ground, and from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." Then the Lord said to him, "Not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold." And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest any who found him should attack him. Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. First off, let's take a minute and talk about the mark of Cain. God has put a mark on him, and some would compare this to a couple of other marks in the Bible. There's a mark that is put on some people in the book of Ezekiel. There's also the mark of the beast, which is very well known from the book of Revelation. Should we be comparing the mark of Cain to these other marks? Well, I think that the first thing we need to realize is that mark is not the best word to translate this. And I say that because mark brings up a few specific connotations in the Bible for us, reading it in English, but really this is a very common word in the Bible that is used in many more places, which are much more innocent. For instance, the stars in the sky are said to be a mark to help us understand the seasons and the years. The rainbow, which is put into the sky after Noah's ark lands, is said to be a mark. The blood, which is put on the doorposts of the Israelites' houses to keep the angel of death from killing them, is said to be a mark. Circumcision is said to be a mark. Moses putting leprosy on his hand, which he can show to Pharaoh to demonstrate that he speaks for God, is said to be a mark. The word that is used here and translated mark is used many, many places in the Bible. In the Septuagint, it is translated into the Greek with the same word that we find in the New Testament for a miraculous sign. So it's very possible that Cain was given a miraculous sign to demonstrate that he had a specific protection from or word from God. You see, God told Cain that he would protect him, and he put a mark on Cain to ensure that others knew that God's protection was on him. Perhaps he even gave Cain a miraculous sign that he could perform so that he could tell people, "God has spoken to me and said, you shouldn't kill me, and here is the evidence of this." Now, did Cain perform a miracle? I don't know. It seems unlikely to me. He wasn't a particularly good person, so it seems somewhat suspect. that he would be performing miracles like a prophet, but perhaps that's the case. But in any case, it is not a guilty thing to have a mark like this. It is much more innocent than many would often point it out to be. But I want to talk a little bit about Cain's heart condition. You see, Cain didn't murder his brother for no good reason. Murder came out of Cain's heart because Cain's heart was bad. Jesus said that the things that go into a man don't make him unclean, but the things that come out of him make him unclean. You see, Cain had an unclean heart. We see it throughout this passage. It's not just that he's a murderer, he's also a liar. He lies to God when God asks him where his brother is. He's flippant about his sin when he says, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Like it's some kind of joke that he killed his brother. He complains when he is punished for his sin, saying, "Oh, this is more than I can bear." Well, maybe he should have thought about that before he murdered someone. Cain's not repentant. Cain doesn't humble himself and say, "God, I'm so sorry." He whines and worries about his own condition. You see, Cain has a heart problem. He's a selfish, dishonest, dangerous man who is envious of his brother, and because he has this envy, he kills him. Now, why is it that Cain has to envy Abel's sacrifice? What is it that makes Abel's sacrifice better than Cain's? Is it the thing that was offered? I don't think so. You know, the two men had different occupations, and so they brought different things. I don't think that God is as concerned with what things are offered so much as he is concerned with how those things are offered and why those things are offered and what our heart is like when we offer them. Hebrews chapter 11 tells us that Abel offered his sacrifice by faith. Evidently, Cain did not offer his by faith. Now, what exactly that means, I'm not entirely sure, but it relates back to his heart condition. Cain has a problem with his heart. And because he has a problem with his heart, he offers a sacrifice that is not as good. John spoke with some depth, or at least a little bit more depth, about Cain and what's wrong with Cain. In 1 John chapter 3, starting at verse 11, we read, "For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another." Cain did not love his brother, did he? Here's what John said. "We should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brother's righteous. Do not be surprised, brothers, that the world hates you. We know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brothers. Whoever does not love abides in death. Everyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him." Of course, those recall Jesus' words. Jesus said that a man who hates his brother without cause is already a murderer in his heart. It is Cain's heart condition which caused him to kill his brother, which made him a murderer. I think that we need to compare ourselves to Cain. We need to see if we hate our brothers. We need to recognize the severity of hating our brothers. And we need to learn to love so that we do not end up like Cain. Another side note from this passage. Verse 13 said, "Do not be surprised, brothers, that the world hates you." I think we should look at the world around us and we should see how much hate there really is for believers. See, many among Christians today will say that persecution of Christians for their faith is illegal and something from the past that doesn't really happen in our society anymore. Well, it does if we're righteous. You see, Cain hated his brother because Cain was evil and his brother was righteous. We live in evil times, and if we are righteous, evil people will hate us. So if you look around at your Christian leaders and find that they are not hated by the world, then you may recognize that they're not as good as they claim to be. You see, if we are doing good and we are following God, we will be persecuted. This is something that we find throughout the scriptures, and so that's something to be aware of. I think that we should note one more thing about Cain's heart condition while we're on the topic. Cain attempted to lift himself up by tearing his brother down. That never works. There's only one way to lift yourself up, And the one way to lift yourself up is to make yourself better. Making other people worse will never make you better. Tearing someone down will not lift you up. You must make yourself better, and you must also strive to make your brother better. Don't hate your brother. Make your brother better and make yourself better. Now, I'd like to talk about Genesis and its context in the rest of Scripture. Genesis is the first book of the Bible, but more specifically, Genesis is the first book of the Pentateuch, Pentateuch being the first five books of the Bible. It is the Torah. These five books are called the Torah in the Hebrew, and Torah means law. The first five books are books of law. Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the next four books, are very dense with laws describing what God's people should be doing. Genesis is different in that Genesis is a book of narratives, but it's still the introduction to a book of laws. And I think that when we read Genesis, we must read it with an eye to the law. You see, in the last chapter, we read about sin. We read about humanity falling away from God and having these interpersonal and man-with-God conflicts that need to be resolved because there's sin in the world. So the question now is, what do we do about sin? And chapter 4 here of Genesis gives us more information about what sin looks like. And we begin to see that there is a justice problem. And having a justice problem indicates to us that we need a good system of laws backed by a good God that can help us to understand what to do about injustice. So let's keep reading. Let's read about Lamech. Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. When he built a city, he called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. To Enoch was born Irad, and Irad fathered Mehujael, and Mehujael fathered Methushael, and Methushael fathered Lamech. Now, by the way, there are some who would take this list of names and try to translate it from Hebrew into English and put those together, those names all together in a sentence to try and tell us something about Cain's line, and then they'll do the same thing with Seth's line in the next chapter, and they'll say, oh, well, Cain's line talks about sin and death, and then Seth's line talks about Jesus coming down to save us from our sins, that it's, man of sorrows and descending and these kinds of things. I just want to let you know that those evidently are born of ignorance or some kind of deception, or perhaps, I'm not really sure what, but it seems that you have to wildly stretch to make that happen. So if you run across that theory, you can, if you want to take my word for it, just accept that it's bunk, or you can go and look on a resource like Blue Letter Bible and see what the names mean for yourself. In any case, now we've come to Lamech, and Lamech is very interesting. Some would tell us that Lamech is an evil man. I'm not sure that I can take that stance. Just because he's in the line of Cain doesn't mean that he is evil. The apple can fall far from the tree. There's certainly sin in Seth's line as well. And I'm not sure that we can automatically decide that Lamech is evil. Of course, the first sentence about him is enough to convince most. Verse 19 says, and Lamech took two wives. The name of the one was Adah, and the name of the other, Zillah. Now, a person is in the context here, not necessarily evil for having taken two wives. The Hebrews who originally read this would not have understood it to be so, because taking two wives or taking multiple wives was allowable under Old Testament law, and it was something that was practiced very commonly by many of the great leaders in Israel, by the patriarchs, and perhaps even by Moses, by King David. So this is something that was quite common, and they would not have looked at it as a bad thing. So I don't think that we should either, because we want to read from the scriptures based on their context. In any case, these wives bore him three sons who some would say were involved in very worldly pursuits. It sounds to me like they were creative fellows, not necessarily bad. But let's read in verse 23 about what happened with Lamech. Lamech said to his wives, Adah and Zillah, hear my voice. You wives of Lamech, listen to what I say. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. Now, some who would like for Lamech to be the culmination of the evil line of Cain would say that he has taken revenge, that this was a revenge killing, that he did it out of anger and in the pride of his heart, and that in his pride, he stands up and says, if Cain is going to be avenged, then you have to avenge me too. That's one way to look at it. We could also look at it and say that perhaps Lamech was not such a bad man. Perhaps he killed this man in self-defense. I mean, a man has come and wounded him. And so evidently, Lamech, it may have been that Lamech fought back and defended himself and killed this man. And it seems somewhat reasonable what he says. He says, if Cain is going to be avenged, Cain, an evil man who killed someone for no good reason at all, then surely I should be avenged, having killed someone who attacked me. But we start to run into a problem of justice, don't we? You see, Cain killed a man for no good reason, and he was not punished. Lamech has killed a man for what is ostensibly a good reason. I mean, I don't know that there's a good reason to kill someone, but this is perceptibly a good reason. And he is insisting that he should be avenged, that no one should kill him. But it's interesting because the man who wounded him has been killed. So neither Cain should be killed, nor should Lamech be killed, but the man who attacked Lamech should be killed. You see, we start to have a problem in that there's no real even standard of justice here in the beginning of the Bible. Some people kill and are punished by no really clear standard. Some people kill and are not punished. Some people attack and don't kill and they die. And others kill for no reason or for a good reason and nothing happens to them. So we have this confusing standard. Whether or not Lamech is a good man, we have a confusing standard that there is no real clear justice. And having no real clear justice, we're not entirely sure what to do with murderers. We're not entirely sure what to do when a man attacks us. What would God have us to do? What is the right thing to do? When you have two brothers, men who are equals, and one kills the other one, what are you supposed to do about it? And who is supposed to do something about it? You see, by the end of Lamech's life, we've reached the time of the flood. And when the flood comes, humankind has become so evil that all they do is evil all the time. No one knows what the right thing to do is. There's confusion and chaos on the earth. And I think that when we look at the book of Genesis, we see that this passage paints for us a picture of that confusion and chaos and points out to us that we need to have laws. A society without laws, without God's moral standards, is a society that becomes confused and evil all of the time, full of bloodshed and killing, and no one knowing what the right thing is to do. So it's very important to us that we understand God's laws and we understand their proper application.